Okay, so I did look into the exam.
Is it cumulative or
Yeah,
just?
the exam would be cumulative. You'll have one sheet of notes allowed, two sides this time. So if you kept your first midterm exam sheet, you could turn it over and add new equations. And they asked me, am I going to have a final next semester? I hadn't really thought about it, but I told them I would not have a sit-down final. There might be a take-home final, but there might be no final at all. Just a final homework assignment. For those of you wondering how ENM2 will work, 6:31. I think I have about four or five registered so far, so don't be shy about registering. Hope some of you will take it. So again, it is going to be here, not over in engineering, the way it says in the, if you look at the official forms, it says it was going to be over there, but I checked into it and we are going to have it here. So if any of you know the people who never come, you might tell them. Let's see, what else? So we started this derivation. And the wave equation comes into so many different contexts in physics. It's really worth understanding it really, really well. And so if you know the Green's function, you can basically solve a large class of inhomogeneous PDEs that involve the wave equation. We'll see several. We've already seen the wave equation for the potentials, vector and scalar. Later today, we'll derive wave equations for the fields themselves. And they can also be solved using this Green's function. So I got almost to the end. If you recall, we decided we would do a Fourier transform. Welcome, welcome. Fourier transform representation of the time dependence, shift that time dependence into the frequency domain. And then we calculated last time the Green's function in the spatial Green's function as a function of omega, which ends up being e to the plus or minus ikr over r. And I already made an argument that the plus sign, which we call the retarded Green's function, is the one that's normally the physical one that we will be interested in, where you jiggle a charge now, waves propagate, and then the disturbance is felt a later time. Strangely, there are some applications where the advanced Green's function comes in. Where I jiggle a charge tomorrow and the waves go backward in time and I feel them today. And some famous physicists have written about this advanced Green's function. I just pulled up Richard Feynman's thesis, which is a 1949 review of modern physics. And I just wanted to read you a couple of sentences to show the kind of intriguing concepts that were needed to solve some hard problems where they need sometimes the advanced Green's function. So he says, generalizing, we conclude advanced and retarded interactions give a description of nature logically as acceptable and physically as completely deterministic as the Newtonian scheme of mechanics. In both forms of dynamics, the distinction between cause and effect is pointless. with deterministic equations to describe the event, one can say the stone hits the ground because it was dropped from a height. If I drop this chalk, I'll be sad. So I'm not going to do that. Equally well, the stone fell from a height because it was going to hit the ground. It seems like that's awfully deep. It's a bit over my head. But it turned out that I think to understand how a charge, we'll talk about this next semester, a charge jiggles, sends out radiation, and then it interacts with that radiation and is modified in its motion because of the back action of the radiation on it. To understand that normally gives all sorts of infinities. And Feynman's thesis was basically finding a way to cope with that. And it turned out that I think they used, in some cases, an advanced Green's function, and in some cases, a sum of both the retarded and advanced. Very tricky mathematics that Feynman came up with, but seemed to get rid of the infinities. Okay, anyway, that's just a little aside.
Is Feynman diagram set of big in the
NMC? No. This is just classical E&M. Okay, so we still have to do the time integral. Every one of you can do this integral in about 1 second, right? It's an exponential with an argument linear in omega. So let me just write that down. This integral is a Dirac delta function. Right, e to the I omega x integrated over omega over minus infinity to infinity becomes delta of x. So that's kind of amazing that the Green's function for this complicated looking wave equation, it's just a Dirac delta function, well, divided by r. In particular, it is just that. I still think that's kind of amazing. Let me write it out back in the original variables once. Remember, it depends in free space only on the displacement between a source and an observation point. And the difference in the source time happening, something happens, and the observation time t. And so this is delta of t minus t prime minus or plus the distance over the speed of light over the distance. And it may seem trivial, but we're often going to want this rewritten in a different way using the fact that delta of x is also delta of minus x, and rewrite it as t minus something. In particular, rewrite this delta function as delta of t prime minus t minus or plus absolute x minus x prime over c. And that will allow us to do the t prime integral more easily if we have this written in this form. So let's go ahead and solve the inhomogeneous wave equation, which could either be the scalar equation with the source, or it could be the one Cartesian component of the vector potential. As you recall, I think we wrote the inhomogeneity as like we were writing this equation for psi as minus 4 pi f of xt. That was our inhomogeneous equation with, we had introduced a generic psi to represent any of those four quantities, and we had introduced, called the generic inhomogeneity f. And so the solution is immediately integral over all space, source coordinates, d cubed x prime, integrate over all source times, dt prime, the inhomogeneity, f of x prime, t prime, and then this delta function, well, our Green's function, g of t prime minus t minus or plus distance over speed of light, all over distance. So, well, that's just a scalar Dirac delta function, and so the easy integral there to do is the time, the source time integral. And so the way Jackson proceeds and the way I will proceed is to go ahead and do the time integral, which eliminates this trivial delta function. And you're just left with a spatial integral, d cubed x prime, and the function f now has to be evaluated at time x prime and at source time t minus, for an earlier time that the source went off before we are getting the wave at the observation point, and time t minus x prime over c over x minus x prime. And there we have our solution. As I said last time, we can add to that any solution of the wave equation homogeneous at x and t. Those radio stations and TV stations are always there, and the Wi-Fi in the house, in the building, that are going to be present as well. It's beautiful and simple. But I recommend you, in your spare time, you all have access to Reviews of Modern Physics all the years. Grab Feynman's article in 1949 with Wheeler. Get a beer or two. And read these weird sections about things going backward in time. And of course, later in his quantum electrodynamics that he won the Nobel Prize for, he talks about positrons as though because the math allows him to say it that way, that he can view positrons as electrons going backward in time. Pretty nutty. Maybe I'll leave that a little longer about the final exam. What did I say? I have no idea. What did I say? About the beer?
No. Oh, I think that you just said.
About the final, I said maybe I'll leave that up there about the final exam a little longer. I think that's what I said. Okay, so the G plus solution, as I'm arguing normally for mere mortals, kind of blue collar electrodynamics, you jiggle a charge and a wave comes out and is felt a time later. And the time it takes from the disturbance to feeling it is that distance over the speed of light. So that's easy to understand. So let's write this out now, adapt it to the actual equations for the potentials. And these are then called, we will use G plus, and we will write the retarded solutions. Retarded just means, right, there's a delay to feel the effect of a current or a charge being in motion. Okay, so the equation for phi of xt, if you remember the inhomogeneous wave equation for phi that we wrote earlier, this will be 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught. Again, this is with no boundaries and no dielectrics, d cubed x prime. We can simply write, this is a notation used a lot in Jackson, which saves a little writing, to write a quantity with the subscript RET for retarded as a shorthand instead of writing all the time rho of x t minus x prime over c. But it's just a shorthand. This means that. But a lot of his equations are written using this, and sometimes having compact notation has a downside because you compress so much the notation that then when you look at a simple formula, it's a little intimidating to unfold it. But try to remember whenever you see this notation that what is under the hood, this t prime equals t minus r over c. And so rho was the only inhomogeneity in the wave equation for phi, for the scalar potential. For the vector potential, it was current density. And so we have mu naught over 4 pi, integral d cubed x prime, the current density, j x prime t prime at the retarded time, t prime, over R. Okay. If you have boundaries, you could do the boundary terms like we did back in electrostatics and all that stuff, but I'm not going to do that. Let's leave it at that. You know how to do all that other stuff. Okay, so let's look at the E and B fields now. And I'm going to again treat them with no media present. So let's start from Maxwell's equations. Del dot E is rho for epsilon naught. Del dot B is zero. Del cross E plus dB dt is zero. So let's take the curl of that sucker. Del cross E plus d by dt, del cross B is zero. But use the usual identity for a curl of a curl. that is del of del dot E minus del squared E. If you haven't memorized that identity, I recommend you memorize it, because you use it a lot for all these derivations with the wave equation. This comes up all the time. And now we have plus d by dt of the curl of B is 0. But now we see some things that were in Maxwell's equations, del dot E. Well, that's rho over epsilon naught. And del cross B, I guess I didn't write that Maxwell equation, did I? But I'll basically write it now. Del cross B is mu naught J plus 1 over C squared dE dt. And so this gives us a wave equation for the electric field. I can write it in the standard form, del squared E minus 1 over C squared d squared E dt squared with an inhomogeneity, which is mu naught dj dt plus 1 over epsilon naught del rho. Which could also be written this way for our final expression as minus 1 over epsilon naught minus del rho minus 1 over c squared dj dt. And that's the form I will focus on for the wave equation of the electric field. We can go through the same kind of logic with the equation for B. Start with del cross B equals mu naught J plus 1 over C squared dE dt. Take the curl of that, use the same identities, and we have del of del dot B minus del squared B plus 1 over C squared D squared B. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. This is mu naught del cross J plus 1 over C squared d by dt del cross E. And now do the same kind of trick we did before. Recall that del cross E is minus dB dt. Thank you, Michael Faraday. And del dot B is still 0. Sorry, Blas Cabrera. And now this gives finally del squared B minus 1 over C squared. We have the conventional wave equation form, d squared dt squared of B is simply minus mu naught del cross J. So there is our wave equation directly for the fields, if you don't want to first do the potentials and then the fields. And so, again, we have a wave equation. Inhomogeneous, we can use our Green's function and write our solution for the electric field. Since, as Feynman wrote, the same equations have the same solutions. I like to call that Feynman's dictum. Let's go ahead and write it. E of xt then must be 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught, a volume integral over the source. There will be a 1 over r from our Green's function, and the time integral just means evaluating the inhomogeneity at the retarded time. So that would be the primed gradient of rho minus 1 over c squared dj dt prime, all evaluated at the retarded time, t minus r over c. And b, its solution, we can write down mu naught over 4 pi integral d cubed x prime 1 over r from our Green's function, and the primed curl of j of x prime t prime, but then evaluated at the retarded t prime. Very compact expression. So as my first E&M teacher taught me, almost all physics comes down to doing integrals. Doing integrals, you can understand everything about the fields produced by time-dependent charges and currents. But there are some tricky things I just want to alert you to a little bit. When you do manipulations of these, you have to be awfully careful with taking partial derivatives of these expressions involving retarded times. One of you came in late. The exam is not in BHEE. It's going to be here at the same time that it says in the final exam booklet or PDF file, same time, but in this room, not over in engineering. Okay, some of the things require care, so this is kind of a warning and alert you to some of the issues you have to be thinking about when you're taking partial derivatives. Okay, so for instance, if I look at del prime of some inhomogeneity that appears in all of these expressions, f of x prime and t prime, evaluated at the retarded time, this is most definitely not equal to the primed gradient acting on f of x prime t prime at the retarded time. Do you see why? Yeah, because x prime has a primed coordinate in it. So when you take the primed gradient, it acts not only on this dependence, it acts on this dependence as well. Okay. Also, this... Another way to say it is that this primed means t prime was fixed when you took the gradient. Right. In this one, it means t is fixed when I take this gradient, not t prime. So let me work out a few of the gradients that appear in these inhomogeneous expressions like this. For instance, this del prime rho as an example. So what you can write that, basically we're using the chain rule. One term is where you just take del prime of rho at the retarded time. So I'm doing this backward. It's like this is the complicated one here. And that, so it would be this plus the time part, but I'm writing it the other way, that this is going to be this minus the time part, which looks like d rho dt prime at the retarded time times the primed gradient of t minus r over c. So let me write that out just to see it in a little more detail once. So del prime of rho of x prime t minus r over c. Which is this. Is del prime of rho retarded, which is this. Plus, actually, let me write that out. It's arguments rho of x prime t prime evaluated at the retarded time plus d rho of x prime t prime dt prime at the retarded time times del prime, right, of t minus r over c. And now that just is going to act on the del prime of r, and del prime of r is minus r hat. Do you all see that, or you want me to show you why that is true? No one wants me to show it? Okay. You can all do that in your sleep. Excellent. So we'll also need, if we want to go further and get a little simpler expressions, we'll need the primed curl of J at the retarded time. And so we can set that up using our Levi-Civita symbols. Oh, I didn't write the final formula for rho, which I meant to do. So finally, this equation for rho is del prime rho. The retarded time is del prime of rho at the retarded time minus r hat over c d rho dt prime at the retarded time. That was the point of that derivation. I forgot to write the final part. Okay, so to do curl of J, I'll look at the kth component. in using the implied summation over repeated indices convention, the Einstein summation convention, that's called. And I claim the kth component of that cross product will be the Kronecker, the epsilon Levi-Civita symbol partial with respect to the ith Cartesian coordinate times the jth component of capital J at the retarded time, which is also epsilon ijk I prime partial derivative, spatial partial derivative of J sub J at the retarded time, minus epsilon ijk partial j sub j partial t prime at the retarded time times the ith spatial derivative in the primed coordinate of t minus r over c. Once we see that form, we can rewrite it in more standard vector notation, go back to vector notation easily enough, namely the curl of J, the primed curl of J at the retarded time is the primed curl of J at the retarded time plus 1 over C, the primed gradient of R, which is a vector crossed into dj dt prime at the retarded time. And finally, that can be simplified to the primed curl of J at the retarded time is the primed curl of J at the retarded time plus 1 over C partial J partial T prime at the retarded time crossed into R hat. Okay. So Jackson proceeds by plugging these in to get somewhat more compact expressions for the fields. Okay, so for instance, we can write out the electric field at a source, at an observation position x, observation time t. As I mentioned last time, all this is carried out in one inertial reference frame. Okay. So you figure out your sources in that frame and so on. And you can do Lorentz transformations to a different reference frame if you want, and that'll be covered next semester, which gets pretty interesting when you're moving close to the speed of light. We're still left with this spatial integral now, and we can write the integrand as minus del prime of rho at the retarded time over r plus r hat over c times r times d rho dt prime at the retarded time minus 1 over c squared r dj dt prime at the retarded time. What could be simpler than that? Charges and currents changing just makes the field, the electric field at your observation point One can sometimes integrate by parts just because it's hard to have more fun than that. So for instance, the integral d cubed x prime of 1 over r, the I prime derivative of rho evaluated at the retarded time, can also be written as minus the volume integral d cubed x prime of rho non-differentiated at the retarded time times the primed gradient of 1 over r, which is of course minus r hat over r squared. It would also have some surface terms, but if we go to infinity, the surface terms from the integration by parts can be taken to be zero if we have localized sources. If you have an infinite wire of current, though, you better be careful about such assumptions. And so the bottom line is, put that all together, we have a generalized Coulomb's law that's valid when you have time-dependent sources, which I will write. It's, of course, in the textbook if you don't want to write it. These formulas get a little long and tedious, but let me write it so you can see it in all its beauty. E of xt, our generalized Coulomb law. Will be 1 over 4 pi epsilon naught integral d cubed x prime r hat over r squared rho of x prime t prime at the retarded time. That term should look awfully familiar to you. That looks like our old Coulomb's law. But now there's other stuff. If the charges are changing in time, we have to include this term. R hat over C times R d rho of x prime t prime dt prime at the retarded time minus 1 over c squared r. The currents could be causing this electric field too. If they are changing in time, we have partial j of x prime, partial t prime at the retarded time. There it is in all its beauty. I could almost write it on half the board. We could do the same kind of thing with B to get a generalized Biot-Savart law. We'll need this identity. The integral of the curl of J at the retarded time, 1 over r d cubed x prime, can similarly integrate by parts and change the derivative to the 1 over r. Primed gradient of 1 over r crossed into j at the retarded time, d cubed x prime. Again, plus surface terms that we'll say vanish if we have localized currents. So this identity says finally this is minus the integral of minus r hat over r squared crossed into j, the retarded time, which should look familiar to you from the Biot-Savart law. And so our equation for B of XT has mu naught over 4 pi integral d cubed x prime j of x prime t prime at the retarded time crossed into r hat over r squared, which would be our old Biot-Savart law. Now we have another term. If the currents are changing in time, partial j partial t prime at the retarded time crossed into r hat over c times r, a new term that Biot-Savart did not know about. So this is our generalized Biot-Savart law. So when we see these equations, we're kind of thinking the way we were macroscopically in electrostatics and magnetostatics. We have currents. We have charge densities, continuous charge densities moving. It's kind of what I think of when I see those equations. But now we know more than Maxwell knew in 1865. We know that all these charge densities are really collections of discrete charges, and even the currents are discrete charges moving. So we can specialize this to point charge behavior. And let's look at just a single point charge. Later, if you have many, you could just add them up. These are linear equations. Let's say we have a point charge, one point charge in the universe in motion, and we'll characterize its trajectory. Maybe someone or something has caused a charge to move in a certain way along a trajectory we'll call r naught of t. Very simple. We've got our Q, and there we go. It's off. Someone or something is making it move. So what is rho? Rho at a source position x prime and a source time t prime is, of course, a Dirac delta function for a point charge of Q multiplying a Dirac delta function of X prime minus R naught of T prime. And similarly, the current density of a point charge in motion at a source position X prime, source time T prime, will be rho of x prime t prime times the rate of change, the velocity, the rate of change of the position with the rate of change with respect to the observation, source times, right, which is just rho v of t prime. It's our current density for one charge in motion. So if we plug in those things, we have more delta functions with lots of messy stuff going on. cross products and derivatives and all that good stuff. But in the end, there are delta functions that can be integrated over and give a complete closed form expression of all the fields, all their components. So I will write one form. In the notes, I wrote two forms. Let me just write one of the forms. E is Q over 4 pi epsilon naught. Then we have R hat over kappa R squared at the retarded time. Kappa here, it comes into all these derivations, 1 minus V dot R hat over the speed of light. That's kappa in these equations. Then we have that added to 1 over C d by dt of R hat over kappa R, the retarded time, minus 1 over C squared d by dt of V over kappa R at the retarded time. Not too bad. Not too ugly. And the analogous equation for B is mu naught Q over 4 pi. And we have V crossed R hat over kappa R squared at the retarded time, plus 1 over C d by dt of V cross R hat over kappa R at the retarded time. Even simpler. Except you have the trickiness of cross products, which is always a little counterintuitive. Something happens and the B field is happening at right angles to that. There are two other forms given in our favorite textbook this semester called Feynman's forms, which rewrite these in a different way, which you might want to know about if you're looking for the simplest forms in some application. You might grab Feynman's forms if they will be easier to work with. But these equations tell you a lot because, right, if you have a charge you jiggle, it's going to send out information at the speed of light to observation points around it. And in some cases, these will involve radiation fields that fall off like 1 over R, and accelerated charges radiate. And we'll discuss those kind of phenomena a lot next semester. Okay, this is all I want to say for now about solving the inhomogeneous wave equations for the potentials and the fields. We've now done it. Both for macroscopic currents in general and for a point charge. So back when we were doing electrostatics and magnetostatics, we talked about energy. Energy is, you know, one of the most important things in our world. And so now that we have time-dependent fields and radiation going on, radiation will cause energy to flow great distances. Thank God for that. Now we have Wi-Fi. So I want to now talk on a really important subject about how energy flows, how momentum conservation shows up in Maxwell's equations, in electrodynamics, and there's even a homework problem on how angular momentum conservation shows up. I forget whether I assigned that. But anyway, let's do the first step. The easiest one is Poynting's theorem. And so what we're addressing in this whole discussion, which will bleed over into next class, is conservation of energy. And eventually we'll also do momentum, linear momentum. Okay, so let's start by thinking of a single charge moving. Let's have a single charge Q like we were talking about over there. Then if this charge is moving and there are some fields present, E and B fields, then those fields will be doing work on this charge as it moves through them. Okay, so in particular, the rate at which the fields do work, maybe I should even write that sentence because that's an important thing. Again, we have to be pretty careful in how we state things when we're working with energy. I'm going to calculate the rate at which work is performed by the E and B fields, which ultimately means by the power sources that made those fields. And for this single charge moving, I claim that rate, it's of course going to have units of power, energy per unit time, is simply the force on the charge dotted into its velocity, instantaneous velocity. So we can plug in the Lorentz force, Q times E plus V cross B, dot that into V, and voila, that is QV dot E. This is sometimes stated as B fields do no work on the charge, because this dot product, right, you have V cross B will be perpendicular to V. If we want, we can generalize this to a macroscopic current and charge density. We can talk about currents in some volume and how much work is being done per unit time on those charges or currents in a volume. Let's say it's in a these are distributed in space. Then the rate of change of energy in some finite volume V is a generalization of that formula over there. dW dt is the volume integral of J dot E d cubed x. And if this were a current, you could also do the usual replacement of J dot of J d cubed x by I dl, integral dl. But let's focus on this volume integral now. And what we're interested in is to see how does the electromagnetic field energy within this volume change in time. For new chalk. Didn't break that one. So I want to eliminate J in these expressions, and this is a kind of a common theme. You want to usually get rid of the sources and re-express them in terms of the fields for these types of derivations. We'll do the same thing with the momentum derivation next time. But the first thing I will do is plug in J is curl of H minus partial D with respect to time from Maxwell's equation. So this is, you see, a very general derivation we're going to go through, at least at this point, not assume anything about our dielectric and magnetic media. So the volume integral of J dot E over that volume V becomes a volume integral now that has only fields in it, E dotted into the curl of H minus E dotted into partial D with respect to time. D cubed x. But now if you notice that the divergence of E cross H is H dotted into the curl of E. This is one of the identities in Jackson, I think, inside front cover. H dot curl of E minus E dot into the curl of H and now remember curl of E is minus partial B with respect to time. Thank you, Michael Faraday. And so I have a new expression for this rate of change of the energy in our volume V. Which is integral of J dot E d cubed x, which was dw dt. Is minus the volume integral of a divergence del dot E cross H plus E dot partial D partial time plus H dot partial B partial time. D cubed x. Okay, we are getting somewhere. Next, I want to get the simplest forms. Let's assume at this point the media are linear. That will give a little simpler forms. And that means the total energy density in the fields in our volume at every point inside is this lowercase u. Energy per volume is 1/2 E dot D plus B dot H. If you remember from the earlier chapters. And so this equation becomes, in this case of having linear media in our volume, we can write this time derivative as du dt, right? Du dt plus divergence of the curl of H the volume integral of that is got to equal minus the volume integral of j dot e d cubed x. And you have this, and remember we had our maybe charges and stuff inside and media and so on, but our volume V didn't have to be a conductor. It's like in Gauss's law, it's some arbitrary volume bounded by a closed surface. And these integrals have to be equal no matter how I choose that volume. And the only way that can be true is if the integrands themselves are equal. And so this leads us to a simple statement of energy conservation that the rate of change at every point in space, du dt, plus the divergence of a vector, s, is equal to minus j dot e. And this vector s is e cross h, is what goes by the name of the Poynting vector. And thus we have proved Poynting's theorem. But it's deserving of some interpretation. So let's talk about this here theorem, what it means. So, what is del dot s? Del dot s is representing the flow of energy out of every infinitesimal point in space. Take some little d cubed x, and if energy is flowing out of it, that is represented by this divergence. It it's important to remember that. It's flowing out of that point. J dot E in our equation over there. Remember, that is the work done by the electromagnetic fields. And so, if you plug your something into the wall, a hairdryer, then something somewhere, some nuclear power plant or coal station is providing that, doing that work ultimately, that's powering that object. And that's represented by this J dot E term. And should think that it's being converted normally into mechanical energy, which means kinetic energy of particles, stuff being moved, or heat energy. Of the particles in that volume. All right, so in other words, dW dt mechanical in the whole volume would be this integral of J dot E d cubed x. Where here W mechanical is the total energy of all the particles within V, assuming that none of the particles are leaving or entering V. Your volume V was drawn big enough so no particles are going in or out. Now, finally, the U term in all this is the energy stored in the fields. Integral form over the whole volume. It's just the integral of U, which is the integral of 1 half E dot D plus B dot H D cubed X for linear media. Again, that formula only works for linear media. And it goes in particular if there are no media to epsilon naught over 2, the volume integral of E squared plus C squared B squared D cubed X. So another way of writing Poynting's theorem in integral form, I'll stop after I write this equation, is dW total dt is d by dt of the energies stored in the fields, in the volume, plus the rate of change of the mechanical energy in the volume, and that is the negative integral, surface integral using the divergence theorem. And so the rate of change of the total field energy plus the total mechanical energy is the negative of the rate of electromagnetic field energy flowing out of V through the surface S. Okay, we'll do some examples of that and also do linear momentum conservation, which is a lot harder derivation. So prepare yourself and read it ahead if possible before the next lecture. And I went over.
Yep.
It is. Do you like it?
I like it. The topic doesn't like me. Yeah.
Okay. If any of you didn't hear the announcement about where the final exam is, stop by and I'll tell you.
Do we have class next Tuesday?
Oh, yeah. We have class, but I'm leaving town right after class, so there will be no office hours Wednesday or the following Monday. But come to class Tuesday. I want to see you guys.